Hello and welcome to another episode of On My Last Eggs. I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I'm navigating the wild throes of perimenopause.
I do think there are a lot of older mothers going in and having children, and no one at any point, you know, should have said to me, really, by the way, when you have this baby, when the baby's born, your hormones are going to be on the floor.
I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails, with plenty of lols and some WTFs along the way.
People were watching out for my postnatal depression, but they weren't kind of saying, actually, because you're an older mum, your hormones will really have checked out and probably will need some intervention.
I'm delighted to welcome to On My Last Eggs this week the director of Menopause Mandate, Laura Biggs. Hello, Laura. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, usually I would start by asking you about your own meno or peri experience and journey, but we're going to come back to that because what I really want to talk about is Menopause Mandate. What slash who is it?
Well, Menopause Mandate is a campaign group and we are a not-for-profit and we are basically there to raise the profile of menopause in the corporate media and on the political agenda. So just to keep it right up there. And we are a group of women. I suppose what we're most known for is our incredible patrons. So our chair is Mariella Frostrop, and then we've got a whole load of other really well-known patrons. And I won't list them all because I won't remember them all because I've got But I would tell you that we've got Mariella, we've got Davina, we've got Penny Lancaster, we've got Cherry Healy, we've got Lavina Meha, Michelle Griffiths-Robinson, Carolyn Harris is a very important one to us, Gabby Logan.
You're doing very well. You're doing very well on this team.
No, it's like the generation.
Yes, it's Crystal Cut the Canter, Cuddly Toy.
Joe Wiley.
You have got amazing patrons. Yeah. And it's really interesting, you know, having a look at the sort of menopause landscape when it comes to, you know, groups and organisations that have sprung up mostly in the last, I'd say, 3 years maybe. Everyone's doing a different kind of job, and I like to think of Menopause Mandate as being a little bit feisty. Would you agree with that, or has that just happened because you've got people like Carol Vorderman on side who is like Carolyn Harris who are like on fire? Is that part of the intention, or is it just sort of panned out like that?
Yeah, well, you know what, it was born from frustration, and that's probably what you detect in it. And it's a lovely story, actually. And maybe one day someone will make a film. It's basically Mariella had Carolyn Harris on her radio show. And they'd obviously done a lot around menopause and had been campaigning for some time, but felt that, you know, it was falling on deaf ears. And what kind of really kind of enraged them was the one prescription fee. And when it was kind of kicked into the long grass again. So they agreed, the government agreed in October 2021 that the one prescription fee would come in. And then they said that would be done by April. And then it was said, actually, no, we're not going to do that. It's going to be kicked into the long grass till March the next year. So they were absolutely incandescent. So they agreed together that actually the only way to make a difference was to gather the troops. And if they could gather all the voices and all their friends in the menopause world, then we could probably start to make a difference. And that's exactly what they did. They got everyone that they knew in the menopause space and got us all together on a Zoom call. And that's how Menopause Mandate was born. It was literally like, okay, we've got to make a campaign. We've got to get a petition going. So that's how we started. And it literally started from frustration. And our first implementation was the petition to say, actually, this can't go on. And we weren't the only reason that the one prescription fee came in, but I certainly think we kept the pressure on. They had no option, but they were going to do it. The other thing that we did was we asked people just to send their stories in. So it didn't feel like actually we're just talking to ourselves or sharing our own stories. We knew that there was women out there who were really, really suffering, and they just poured in. They poured in and they still are pouring in. So we obviously have got our patrons, but we've got our medical experts who support us. And then we have people who are doing normal jobs and can help us raise the profile in the corporate world and also help us get to market. So we, as I say, is a not-for-profit. So people have been very generous and given us money to help us do what we do, help us produce books, help us put in a phone line, help us put in GP helplines. So all of that has kind of grown quite organically. But as you say, you recognize that feistiness. A, we can get to market super quick because we're nimble and we can get to people really quickly and we can be super reactive. And B, we're a big group. So there's lots of voices and lots of powerful voices in there.
What is on the horizon? What other things? You know, you must have a big long list. You check for that one. What else would you like to see? What feels like a priority? What would you like to see change or improve?
Well, we definitely, the big thing we're hearing right now is the shortages of HRT. And there's two things. There's the shortages and also the education around GPs. And, you know, it's not their fault. They weren't educated. And if for any, I think it's like 4 hours in their whole curriculum that they get dedicated to menopause. So, you know, we can't magic utrogestion out of thin air. There is a shortage. We know that. They say it's going to be sorted by September, October time. But in the meantime, making sure that GPs and pharmacists and women understand what is the alternative, what are their options, so they don't start taking estrogen on its own. We're not medical, but we have great access to medical experts. So, you know, we want to make sure that certainly over the summer into the early autumn that we get that message out. And that we are much closer to the pharmaceutical companies to make sure that that doesn't happen again. Our big thing is always to educate women and to help them understand. So we're not saying everybody should be on HRT. It's not right for everybody. But those that are heading into perimenopause or menopause certainly become more aware of their options and understand. I never want to be that dinner party bore that goes bangs on about HRT and take it. But I do spend a lot of time saying, actually, you're only replenishing what you're losing naturally. And people still feel that stigma. Oh, I don't want to rely on something. I don't think I need, I don't like taking Nurofen or I don't like taking paracetamol. And now it's all the body identical hormones that it is, you know, it is a natural replacement for your hormones.
So as well as menopause mandate, you are also the owner and CEO of Intuitive Events, and that's the team behind Let's All Talk, and there's Let's All Talk Menopause, Let's All Talk Mental Health, and the Fertility Show as well. So you organise events. That's at the heart of what you do. Are we going to have a big menopause conference show, 3-day NEC menopause thing? Are you going to pull one of those out of the bag for us, Laura?
I don't know. You know, I don't know if that's what we want or we need. You know, I definitely think there's an educational piece to be done, and I definitely think there's some learning. I don't know if we all want to go to an event to go and look at face creams we should be using or pajamas we should be wearing or shampoo we should be. And I'm not sure there is a lifestyle event for, you know, I've run events all my life and not just health events. I used to run big gardening and food shows, and they were very successful because they're passions. So we have a passion for cooking or we have a passion for gardening, therefore we might go to this event. I'm not sure that we have a passion for this stage of life. I think there is a need to understand more. So I definitely think potentially there's some educational pieces or some great speakers that we could bring to the party, but I'm not sure. And you know, never say never, because I'll always have a little go. But I can't, you know, the fertility show is very much a need. So there is a need. And I, you know, we can talk about that a bit on my last eggs, because I'm my last eggs lady. And there's a real need for that. There's a need because, you know, fundamentally, if you can't have a child naturally, then you need to find a way through.
Imagine this, though, Laura. So I'm not in the events business. I've no idea how many people go to like a big event, like camping and caravan show or something. And I hear exactly what you're saying about we don't want an event where it's just have this face cream, take this collagen, you know, whatever it might be, just money making out of us. Absolutely, we don't want that. But I'm thinking it's a good opportunity for education. Also, it may not be a passion, but there is something in trying to relight our fires. We could take that to play, because what I was going to say is it could be something with some inspirational women and some performances and some creativity and stuff like that. But also, what I'm really thinking is, if you get, I'm just pulling a figure, 30,000 people there, women, across the weekend. Would that be like a reason? Could you get 30,000 women there?
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. You also set up some kind of proper regulated, again, I'm not in the health business or the academic business, you get opportunity to do some really good study. So everyone who comes agrees to spend half an hour answering questions, you know, whatever. And we've got this really great on the spot information gathering. You know, no one's gathering this information. And I'm wondering whether an event would be a really good opportunity to sort of marry lots of things that you probably wouldn't normally put in an event. What do you reckon, Laura? I'm just spitting ideas here.
Oh, I love it. I love a good chat about ideas. I definitely think there's something. I definitely think there is. And we are going to do something next April in terms of a kind of an inspirational evening with some of our patrons. It's really exciting, actually. It won't be quite for 30,000, but it will be the evening, I imagine, will make us laugh and cry in equal amounts.
Good.
Because it will be, you know, sharing some uplifting and funny stories about this stage of life. And then obviously some real, you know, why we're doing what we're doing. And essentially, you know, there are lots of young women who are going into early menopause that are kind of, you know, they don't even know it's happening. But not only they go into early menopause, they lose their fertility at the same time. And that's just that people are missing that, still missing that, which is absolutely horrific. And that, you know, we are desperately losing great women from the workplace, and we need to stop that happening too.
Let's talk about fertility, because we think of fertility often as this kind of ticking clock, you know, that is heading towards menopause. But you usually got a kind of, even when the clock starts speeding up, there's usually still a gap where things are possible. And for you, I think it seems like your sort of fertility clock and your menopause kind of crashed into each other, potentially sort of quicker than maybe you were thinking, but you were still determined to have another child, weren't you? So I want to ask you about your menopause journey, but I feel like they're two stories sort of inextricably linked. So perhaps let's start with fertility and your clock running out when you were first having babies.
I'm now 51. So just to give you a timeline, and I got married when I was 29, and about 2 or 3 years after that, decided that we were ready to have children, and then kept trying and trying and trying, and nothing happened. And then I went to the GP, and he said, "Oh, you know, we'll refer you." But back in those days, there was no fertility treatment, which just wasn't available on the NHS over the age of. Now, fast forward, I'm now 32 or 33, so I'd missed the NHS boat, because anything over 30, I don't think there was, you weren't entitled to NHS treatment, so I had to go straight to private treatment. Anyway, I met an amazing doctor who diagnosed me with endometriosis. I mean, this is a long time ago. I had never heard of it. I had no idea. And, you know, his questions to me were, are your periods painful? Oh, yeah, they are pretty painful, but I don't know what other people feel like, so no, I don't know. But yeah, you shouldn't be having the pain that you're having. Anyway, I suspect that you have got endometriosis. So he performed a laparoscopy, which is the only real way of determining whether you have got it. And I had it quite severely. So my left ovary was fused to my bladder. Anyway, basically, in his words, he'd given me a bit of an MOT and cleaned my tubes and sorted out the endometriosis. And often that results in quite a quick pregnancy, of which it did. Thank God. I got pregnant 2 months after that operation.
That's a great good news story, isn't it?
It is a great good news story.
You found the doctor who recognised something that no one was talking about at the time.
Yeah, he was brilliant. Yeah, he was brilliant. And so he's retired now. His name is Alvin Priddy. He was brilliant and worked at Clementine Churchill. And he was lovely to me and Phil, actually, because he let us come in for an early scan with William. And yeah, so Will is now nearly 18. So that's how long ago it was. Anyway, I really wanted baby number two. And I had a big job at the time. So I went back to work pretty quickly after Will was born. And anyway, by the time I'm knocking 39, 40. So, and I want another baby, and it's not happening, it's not happening, it's not happening. And then I went back for another laparoscopy for the magic. The endometriosis had come back quite severely again. So I had my MOT and tried again, and it didn't work. didn't work. I had acupuncture and reflexology. I went on diets. I stopped drinking. And it didn't happen. Anyway, I went back, had another laparoscopy. Still didn't work. So I'm now 42. And I have a round of IVF. And everything goes swimmingly well. And I get 5 great eggs. And they're all top grade. What nobody has told me at this point is actually beyond the age of 36, your fertility starts to really decline. And actually over the age of 42 is a really pivotal age in fertility, and your fertility falls off a cliff. It literally goes really fast. So basically at the age of 42, I probably had a between a 5% and 8% chance of success.
Wow, it's very low, isn't it?
Even with 5 eggs. But the thing is, I did have a really high egg reserve, but it doesn't matter if the quality of the eggs aren't good. And on paper, everything is great. It looks good, but something wasn't quite right. I had 2 rounds. I had a round with fresh eggs and a round with frozen eggs, and neither worked. And it was devastating. And anyone who's been through it will resonate with that, because it's just, you know, you ultimately are pregnant by the minute they put that embryo in, because that's, you know, you've done the job outside and it's gone in. It's just, it doesn't stick, essentially. And it didn't work. So I kind of closed the door on it, to be honest, because I thought, I can't go through that again. It's so hard for that to happen. And you go through that, and then you go through all of it. Just the emotion is quite draining on your body. The hormones that you have to put in, the egg collection, the stimulation, and then for no chance of success. We went to one more big clinic, which is well known for its protocol, but literally it is, you've got to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning. You've got to get your bloods then. You've got to do it, you know, you've got to come in for egg transfer and get your bloods taken every day. And I just remember saying to Phil, okay, I reckon by all's out, this is going to cost between £20,000 and £30,000. And we have got 95% chance of it not working. Where else would you put £30,000 with a 95% chance of losing your money? I can't do it again. And I can't take that pressure. So we shut the door. Still at this stage, no one's actually said to me that there are other options you can consider. We thought about adoption and we went to a few meetings, and adoption is brilliant and amazing, but it wasn't quite right for us. I think if we hadn't had William, we might have thought differently. But we had got Will, and I kind of walked away and said, actually, let's get a dog. So we did. We got Doris.
I wasn't expecting that plot twist.
I didn't give birth to Doris. But she is a beautiful furry baby, and she is now 9. So that kind of gives you the time scale. And in this time, weirdly, I was in the events business, as I mentioned before, and the fertility show came up for sale. And my business partner at the time said, oh, this is on the market. What do you think? And I said, actually, I think I could add a lot of value to that, because I understand it. I've been there. I am that person. And I really think I could work on that. So we bought the fertility show. So randomly, we had a food show, a gardening show, and a fertility show. And now when I look back, it feels like it came to me, because who else would buy a fertility show? When you've got a food show and a gardening show. Anyway, it came to me, and I kept going to the fertility show, and I kept going to the older women talks, and I discovered egg donation, which had never been mentioned to me before, because I thought you had egg donation when you
didn't have any eggs.
I didn't realize, and this is my big mission in life, to tell women that actually when you have an egg donor, you revert, your fertility chances revert to the age of your donor. So I was now the wrong side of 46. Okay, so the chances of IVF working with my eggs, and I still had a high egg reserve, was literally, you know, 1 in a million. And it does randomly happen, but very, very rarely. To have a pregnancy with a donor egg, and it's not always successful, but the likelihood is that you revert to the age of your donor. My donor was very young. So my chances of having my IVF working went right up to 75%. So I went back from having no chance to a 75% chance of conception. Anyway, I said to my husband, I really want to have another go and I can't shut this door because I still always wonder what if. And if we hadn't tried again, I don't think I would have ever settled. You know, I was still looking at babies in pushchairs and pregnant women, and, you know, people would stop asking me. And that made me sad, actually, because it made me feel old. It made me feel like, well, they're not asking me anymore because I don't think I could. People stop saying, you know, you're still trying.
So that must be a real double-edged sword as well, because probably when people kept asking you, that's probably also quite painful because you have to keep saying, well, no, it's not worked and everything. And then people stop asking you, and that's painful for different reasons. Yeah.
It's weird. It is. You're actually right. You know, one hand, you do, it's hard. And the other hand, you know, a few people said some really old stuff to me, and I know they don't mean it, and it didn't mean it, but it was just, I remember my old neighbour saying, why have you got such a big house? No, I haven't got a really big house, but a big, and you've only got one child.
Gosh.
And she's a nice lady. She just didn't realise what she'd actually said.
Yeah, how impactful and cruel. I mean, unintentionally, but a cruel thing to say, unintentionally,
I convinced Phil that was a good idea. And look, I'd have one go at this. And then if it didn't work, I could move on. But I had also made a decision, actually, that if it didn't work, I could no longer work on the fertility show, because the fertility show made me really sad, and that I found it really difficult to walk into that space and see all these beautiful young couples, men and women, and single girls, and trying to find their route to parenthood. And it just devastated me because I just felt their pain. And, you know, what lots of people say is the most natural thing in the world. Unless you have encountered infertility, you can't understand that want. And, you know, it consumes you, and it definitely consumed Phil and I for over 10 years. Anyway, I convinced him that it was a good idea. We went for treatment abroad, and we didn't tell anybody, but we had our treatment, and it worked. So I was pregnant at 47.
Amazing.
And my son at that time was 13.
Wow. And how was the pregnancy and everything?
You know what?
Because it is quite an age, you know. I mean, I've known women that have, you know, babies at 40, and not the same as you, but similar in the sense they might have had one at 32, and then they have one at 40, and they're like, oh my God, it's so much harder. I feel so much older. How was it?
You know what? I think there was two things. A, I'd got myself in the best physical shape I possibly could because I knew what was coming. So I was probably fitter than I was when I had Will. And I certainly, you know, my lifestyle was a bit different at that stage in life. So I was physically prepared. But then when she arrived, I naively, and I'm running a fertility show, I'm running fertility talks, I kind of thought, well, my periods just won't come back, you know. I was on my last eggs.
Yes.
And I just thought they'd magically disappear and that would be all fine.
I think that just sounds like a wonderfully optimistic rather than naive. But
naive. Anyway, they did come back, and they came back with a vengeance. They were horrific, horrific. I literally had the worst periods I've ever had, and I couldn't really go out because the flooding was so horrific. It hit me like a train. And also, what I hadn't thought about, and I thought it was a little bit of baby blues and lockdown at the same time, but I was meant to be in the happiest place I should have been, because I got the baby that I'd longed for 10 years. I'd sold a business, so I had time and a bit of money. And I should have been very happy, but I just had no joy. And that was my word, lack of joy. Like the things that I would normally love, I stopped loving. And, you know, even going out for dinner or going to my favourite restaurant or going to see a movie or going to the theatre, I was like, it's all right, it's all right. So it's really lacklustre and really just a bit meh is the word. And I thought that was just a bit of hormonal. But now I look back and think, well, this was, you know, perimenopause hitting me like, I'd probably put it on ice with all the fertility treatment before and the pregnancy. So, and I went to see a gynecologist about my heavy periods, and she gave me transmatic acid, which is basically a tablet to stop the heavy bleeding. And she didn't talk to me about HRT or actually this is what this is and what you're feeling is your perimenopausal, and your heavy bleeding can be controlled by these. And I couldn't have the Manera coil because I'd had so much intervention downstairs that I was basically like a pincushion. So they felt that it wouldn't work, it would fall out or tear.
Gosh, I mean, it is insane, isn't it? I think flooding's come up a lot in this series, actually, and really heavy periods. And the story's so similar. I mean, not necessarily that, but no one seeming to know what to do with it or really seem to care how much it must be affecting your life, you know?
I mean, literally, I couldn't go out for more than half an hour without having to be near a loo. And also what that was doing to my iron deficiency alone.
Yeah.
It was just awful. And, you know, I'd be sleeping on two towels and having to get up at night and change my underwear and change my towel. It was just horrendous. And I remember being up for supper with some friends. I said, you've got to walk behind me because it's all over my dress. And I just like, oh my God, this is so awful. This is like being a teenager again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, I got on HRT, all sorted, started Let's All Talk Menopause and never looked back.
Well, I like how quickly you wrap that story up, but we're coming back to the menopause aspect, because let's remember, as well as the flooding and the lack of joy, you've also got a baby, an ever-growing teenager, and you're going through perimenopause. How was all that?
Yeah, well, I look back on it, and I think, and like many women of my age, lockdown kind of made you question everything, didn't it? Because I think we're all feeling a bit rubbish because of what was happening. It got kind of clouded in all of that. And Will was at home, you know, I had a toddler at home and this menopause that I was trying to get my head around. So it was pretty rubbish, if I'm honest. And it was tough all round. You know, it was my choice to have a baby late in life. But I do think there are a lot of older mothers going in and having children, and that no one at any point, you know, should have said to me, really, by the way, when you have this baby, when the baby's born, your hormones are going to like be on the floor because you will be hitting perimenopause. Therefore, you know, you might want to think about taking HRT pretty quickly after the baby comes. And that was, you know, people were watching out for my postnatal depression, but they weren't kind of saying, actually, because you're an older mum, your hormones will really, you know, have checked out, they've gone, and you probably will need to have some intervention.
So you had your baby at 47.
Yeah.
And what stage did you get the HRT? And
I was 49.
And have your periods stopped now?
I'm still perimenopausal, but basically as soon as I went on HRT, the periods, you know, got very, very light. And now I take it, as I've been on it for 18 months, I now take it all the way through. So although I know I'm still having a cycle, I'm not getting a real bleed. So yeah, the HRT is straight. I mean, as soon as I went on it, the flooding stopped, the periods were lighter. And yeah, I just thought, oh my gosh, why didn't anyone tell me this? This just, you know, I remember speaking to this amazing nurse who helped me right at the beginning. And she said, well, you don't have to put up with these heavy periods. The HRT will sort it. If it doesn't, we'll put you on the pill. You don't need to put up with these hairy bits. This is ridiculous. And she said, you know, and she said the HRT will sort it. And, you know, as soon as the patches went on, the periods got back to normal. And the endometriosis pain had gone. And all the other symptoms that I had towards that completely dissipated. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still a juggling act, but I certainly feel a lot better.
We talk a lot about you know, how ridiculous it is that people in the medical profession, your GP, obviously the first person you usually see, they don't seem to put two and two together. You present with all these symptoms and it seems the easiest thing that they should be able to say, well, this is perimenopause and it doesn't happen, and it's very frustrating, and that's what happens to me. And then you meet somebody who's kind of like, you know, the angel in all of this.
You know, you say that my mum is now on HRT. She's 80. She has suffered since I can remember with terrible UTIs. And she has been on really, really strong antibiotics to stop the UTIs for probably 10 or 15 years. When I was pregnant, she had this terrible, terrible cough. And I said, Mum, we've got to get this sorted. It's not, you know, I'm not talking because your cough is so bad. she said, you know, I've had an x-ray, everything's fine. I said, look, this is not normal. You can't talk without coughing. There's something going on. Anyway, I took her to a great friend of mine who's a GP, who's a brilliant GP. And she sat my mum down and said, right, what medication are you taking? And she said, well, I've got a feeling it's this tablet. This one of the side effects is chest damage.
Wow.
Anyway, it transpires that my mum was taking this horrible antibiotic that she'd been taking for years that actually started to cause damage and scar tissue on her lungs for the
My God.
So they got her off that tablet, but there was irreparable damage to her lung done by this antibiotic because she'd taken it for so long. And the cough went away, but the UTIs came back. Anyway, she went, and this is like before we even realized that UTIs were, and she went straight to gynae who said, I'm going to put you on vaginal estrogen, a HRT basically. And my mom came to, you know, this woman's put me on HRT. The UTIs have gone.
Yeah.
And I think all those years that she put up with those water infections. And when I was started to get into menopause, I said, Mum, what was your menopause? She said, oh, actually, I had a hip replacement when I was 45 and my period stopped. So I didn't really go through menopause. They just stopped. And I said, well, when did you stop sleeping? And when did the UTI start? And she said, about that age.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that was menopause because they didn't have a hot flush.
The symptom, the hot flush and being really moany.
Yeah, she didn't get that, but she got awful UTIs that she never spoke about. Just what you've been through, really, when it could have been, you know, HRT. She just wasn't given it because no one picked up that those symptoms were menopause related.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad they have now. Yes. And I feel like that is a good story to end on, because I feel like, although it's not a good story for your mum, or better now, I feel like that's the old way.
Yes.
Let's go forward with a new way where nothing like that will ever have to happen to another woman again. She won't get to 80 before anyone susses out what it could be, you know. Let's hope that's the way forward. It's been fascinating to speak to you, Laura. Great to hear about the menopause mandate. Is there anything with menopause mandate we should be like keeping our little beady eyes and ears open for? Is there anything exciting? Obviously, you've got your event next spring.
There is, actually. We've just announced it this week, but we are going to do on World Menopause Day. We did a rally last year because we were rallying for the one petition and one prescription fee. But this year we are doing a walk in the park. So a menopause walk and talk, and that will be in Hyde Park on the 18th of October on World Menopause Day, where we encourage women and men to come along and walk and talk for on World Menopause Day.
Well, there's your 30,000 people right there. There's you saying, I'm not organising a big event, Laura. That sounds like it's in Hyde Park with all the patrons you've got. I'm pretty sure you've got a big event going on there.
I know. I don't know why I didn't.
How long have we been talking for? Oh, it's like getting blood out of a stone.
Like, I'm pleased that you asked me.
Blood out of a menopausal womb, that was.
Walk in the park, 18th of October. Hyde Park, 30,000 people coming. You must come to that.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. Fascinating personal story, and I love what you're doing. I love Menopause Mandate. I love the feisty kind of vibe. So keep it up, and I'll see you on a walk in the park.
Absolutely. See you there.
Thanks, Thank Laura you. Biggs, for coming on My Last Eggs. Thanks again to Laura Biggs. And that's it for this season of On My Last Eggs. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate your support, and we hope you found this podcast useful. If you haven't already, do listen back to the other 30 plus episodes we've recorded over the last couple of years, all full of brilliant people who know their stuff when it comes to menopause. You can also check us out on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. And if you haven't done yet, please do give us a review if you've enjoyed On My Last Eggs. Have a great week. See you soon.